Now, United Ireland could cost this country around 20 billion euro a year for two decades, and that would require an increase in taxation of around 25% and a significant reduction in expenditure. The costs and the numbers have been crunched in a new report from the Institute of International and European Affairs and are based on pre-pandemic figures. Professor John Fitzgerald is co-author of the report and co-chair of the Institute of International and European Affairs, economist and research affiliate of the ESRI. And he is here in studio, and a very good morning to you.
Good morning.
The cost of reclaiming the fourth green field does not come cheap, but how do you arrive at 20 billion?
Well, at the moment, in 2019, the central government in London had to transfer 11 billion to Northern Ireland to pay for health, education and so on. So there's a gap between the revenue in Northern Ireland and the expenditure. The gap would be somewhat smaller in the case of unification, because the British Army costs a lot, but it would just knock about a billion off the cost, so you're down to 10 billion. Also, welfare payments and public sector pay rates are dramatically lower in Northern Ireland and the Republic. You couldn't really have unification and have the poor cousins up north paid two-thirds of what they are in the south, so that would cost 10 billion to equate social welfare payments and public sector pay.
And the impact on this economy?
Well, if you have to find 20 billion, that's like a third of a bank bailout every year. It's a lot of money. So it will be very expensive. And the solution is, if Northern Ireland dramatically changes how they run their economy, in particular in the educational sphere, which would mean that the gap between the north and the south would narrow, and also that their revenue would rise substantially more. But changing education takes time. It would take probably about 20 years before they caught up.
This is an emotive subject. It's also extremely controversial. But is the conversation happening around these very financial figures that you are now talking about and that you've put into this report?
Yes, there's a lot of debate on that. There have been a series of papers. There's another paper very similar to ours by Esmond Burney, published last year, a Northern Ireland economist. We published first these figures in 2020 and we've revised them. They're out there. Mm. I think people, a major argument saying actually it is doable, is that the UK will be generous and continue to cough up the 10 billion for a long time. I think that unlikely, because if Scotland became independent, it's much bigger. And if they were exceptionally generous with Northern Ireland, it would actually break the UK if they had to be as generous with Scotland. So I just don't see the UK...
You don't see a continuation for any length of time, even for a 2, 3, 5 year period?
You could see a transition.
You know, there's a negotiation to happen.
You could
there.
See a transition for 2 or 3 years. Mm. But the way it would happen, there would be a referendum in the north, vote for unification. Mm. There'd be a referendum in the south if people voted for unification. And my real fear is that the people, we in the south, would vote no because it'd be too damned expensive. But assuming it goes through, you then go to the British and say, we're leaving, unification is going to happen. Now what will you give us? And at that stage, your bargaining power is gone. So I think those who advocate very strongly for Irish unity trust to British generosity, and I'm not sure that when we're richer than the British, that they would be generous.
And what about the generosity of our European Union partners and the generosity of the United States?
You'd get a small contribution. But remember, we're much richer than most countries in Europe. So the idea that they would cough up, especially when they're cross with us on corporation tax, that they would cough up 10 billion a year over a number of years, that's more than they give in structural funds to some of the poorer EU countries. So I think that looking for somebody else to pay for unification is not going to happen. If it happens, we've got to pay for it ourselves.
But as you say, we are much richer than many other countries. So can we afford it?
We could. We afforded the bank bailout. It's very painful. So, yes, it is possible.
And, you know, staying with the bank bailout, you could say it's very painful for a period of time. And then you get your house in order, and this time it's a 32 county house. And does the economy get a bounce from that? More productivity, more people, more initiative, more entrepreneurship?
There would be some bounce, but like there's one study which suggested, oh, it'll all come right on the day because a united Ireland would grow more rapidly. There would be some bounce there, but for Northern Ireland, they're fully integrated into the British economy. And if they had to put up a border, we've seen all the rows about the Windsor Protocol and so on, that would be extremely damaging to them in the short run. So actually, Northern Ireland would probably do worse initially. They might, in the long run, catch up.
Can we draw in any way here, and I know it's a long time ago now, on reunification in Germany and lessons that might have been learned there?
My colleague Edgar Morgenroth looked at that in detail in the paper, earlier paper we did. German unification, the Germans were told by Chancellor Kohl at the time, this isn't going to cost you, but it has cost them billions subsequently. One of the lessons was welfare payments were brought up to German standards relatively rapidly, and they converted wages into, they were still much lower than West Germany, but it was very costly. And even today, if you look at Germany, there's completely different voting patterns in the former East Germany than in West Germany. So it takes a long time to produce a united Germany.
You invest a considerable amount of time in this report on education and education in the North. And it might surprise people, I think, that you say education has not advanced in the way it has down here, that opportunity has not been shared equally in Northern Ireland, and that will have a knock-on impact in terms of productivity.
Yes, the Northern Ireland education system was better than the Republic up to 1970, but we then introduced free secondary education. And the way we did it, kids in Coot Hill or Clare Morris or Chapel Izzet go to the same schools. So that you don't, in Northern Ireland, 40% of kids go to the really good schools, the grammar schools, and nearly all of them go on to university. The other 60%, in particular, those from disadvantaged backgrounds, go to what are called secondary schools, and an awful lot of them drop out early. And that's a real cost to society. And like there have been a series of studies, one done by Vanni Barua and Colin Knox, a book in Northern Ireland, which shows that kids from disadvantaged backgrounds, that they're very poor access to education and they drop out early. The other thing in Northern Ireland is an awful lot of their kids, especially from the Protestant background, go to Britain for university and never come back. And in our case, many graduates do go abroad, but they're like homing pigeons. The bulk of them come back.
People in Northern Ireland would also hang dearly, surely, to the NHS.
Yes. And the NHS is in some ways better than in the Republic. But in other cases, actually, the Republic is now ahead. And the NHS is facing, like, the waiting lists in Northern Ireland are dramatic, much worse than in England. And that's an issue in terms of the current negotiations in terms of funding from London.
You don't talk about your opinion as to if this should happen and why it should happen and so on. But what about, if it is to happen, and if it were to happen in the not too distant future, how much preparation needs to be done in advance?
Well, there'd have to be a referendum in the North, and you need to tell the people of Northern Ireland what it's going to mean. And we know in the South, there'd have to be a referendum here. And if people aren't clear on what's going to happen, they'll vote
no. So you say crunch the numbers well in advance so that you have all the detail before they go to them. Writing the Irish Times this morning, Mark Hennessy is reminding us that your own father, Garrett Fitzgerald, writing more than 50 years ago on the cost of reunification, and he said, it is quite bluntly economically impossible for the Republic to take on such a burden. Has it changed, or would that still be a view you'd hold?
If you read his book carefully, he actually says what Sinn Féin would say. He expected a united Ireland in his lifetime. It didn't happen. And he thought that a united Ireland would see much stronger growth than the two separately. He was suffering from optimism bias. And at the time, an ESRI paper in 1974 said, actually, this is not realistic, rather what we're saying today.
All right, lots more for discussion. Thank you very much for coming into us. That's Professor John Fitzgerald, the co-author of that report on the cost of reunification.